On this Labor Day, we will talk with Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld about the state of organized labor, including a new report showing working people are working more and taking fewer vacation days. We'll also look at what the Foxconn deal means for labor in Wisconsin, as well as other issues that matter to workers. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and we continue a decades-long Labor Day tradition by talking about labor issues with a guest from the AFL-CIO. And we welcome your questions, we welcome your experiences, we welcome your thoughts on this Labor Day. I'd also like to know, are you working on this Labor Day? Are you getting overtime? Are you taking more or less vacation time these days? If given the choice, would you join a labor union? Just curious. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Phil Neuenfeld. He is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having us. And that's a lot of stimulating questions you asked there to open the show.
We want to get some discussion going here. But the AFL-CIO asked these questions in a survey that was released recently. The report, which was released last week, shows that working people are working more and taking fewer vacation days.
Right.
Among the findings, more than half of those surveyed said they were working more holidays and weekends than ever. 43% said that they brought home work at least once a week. We're working a lot more and not relaxing enough. Is that what's going on?
Well, that is correct. But before we get into this, I do want to take a moment that, or when we talk about working less, I want to, thank you for all the time that you've spent this and remind people that you're going to be retiring in the next year, correct?
I am. I'm, in fact, at the end of this month, I'm going to be, my last day will be September 29th. So this will be our last, at least my last Labor Day show with you.
Well,
but I'm sure that someone else from Wisconsin Public Radio will continue on this tradition. But thank you for your kind words. And yeah, it's after 30 plus years, I decided to hang up the microphone.
Well, and the ability to do that is, you know, part of the American dream, and it's part of the dream, of course, that's slipping away. The AFL-CIO report called Laboring on Labor Day really gets into, how people have less ability to take time off because of pressures at work and what's going on in the economy. And when you look at, it's Labor Day. And as always, you know, we want to celebrate the contributions that working men and women make every day, the sacrifices that they make, recognizing the stress that it puts on families and being able to take a day off to reflect on those things is an important American tradition. And I want to encourage everybody that, you know, lives in a community where there is a Labor Day celebration to try to get down to that Labor Day celebration and talk to the working men and women of American unions and, take stock of where we are as workers and take stock of our economy, you know, recognize and honor the achievements of all American working people. It's a very important thing that we don't let slip away. And to your point, and here we are working on Labor Day, right?
Right, that's right.
That, you know, more and more people are having less time off, so it's just important to think about those sorts of things. You know, it does go hand in hand with reflecting on our economy. We have to keep thinking about the best ways that working people can come together to build an economy that works for all of us, that puts, you know, work-life balance in place. And, you know, we have to keep in mind that, you know, the economy is not like the weather. It does not just happen. As citizens, we elect people that develop policies that shape and help form our economy. And, you know, sadly, today's economy, we find that it's badly out of balance in terms of work life, in terms of time off. And then when you look at the rewards for that work, you know, you look at the CEO pay ratio. In 2016, it was an obscene 347-1. Recently, the Center of Wisconsin Strategy released their State of Working Wisconsin report, which they do every year. And it shows income inequality, you know, the gap growing here in Wisconsin. Yeah. So we've got to remember that, you know, this inequality is not inevitable, that, you know, the economy is nothing more than a set of rules, and we've got to work at, and we must elect leaders that will rewrite those rules so that we have livable wages, that the benefits are strong, that work is safe, retirement is secure, and the freedom to negotiate is universal, because that's the way that we can achieve these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. When we see what's going on across this country, what's coming out of Washington, what's coming out of Madison, we have laws that, you know, protect us in the economy. We need laws that protect us. You know, we have laws that protect us in our community, I should say. We also need laws that protect us in the economy. So we have to keep working at those sorts of things. You know, the latest Gallup poll does show people viewing labor unions more favorably. I believe it was 61% had a favorable view, which is the highest in many, many years. And I think that when we look at what's happening, you know, with the laws, with, you know, as far as the attacks on wages, you know, you're seeing a rollback on overtime pay regulations, you know, the health care debates. You look at what's going on with other attacks on wages, whether it's prevailing wage or suppressing people's ability to make a living. It's very clear that the only way people can find that voice in their workplace and achieve economic justice is by joining a union or forming a union and coming together and having a collective voice to speak better, you know, to these issues that are so important to our lives and our families and our communities. So, you know, this Labor Day, have a celebration, you know, across the state. Let's, you know, celebrate what we've accomplished, but let's also recognize the challenges that we have in front of us, because here in Wisconsin, you know, we're seeing lowering wages, we're seeing attack on workplace rights, we're moving backwards by attacking the freedom of both public sector and private sector workers to stand together in unions in the workplace. We've lowered wages. Once again, you know, the repealing of prevailing wage standards in the construction industry, attacking project labor agreements, the expansion of misleading right-to-work laws, you know, the rollbacks on workplace safety and on and on and on is not a good trend, and it is definitely not a good track for working families in the state. So
let me jump in with a question about survey, which showed that union members are more likely to have Labor Day off than non-union members. And of those union members working today, 66% are getting overtime pay. For non-union members, only 38% are getting overtime. So what does that tell you?
Well, that kind of reinforces the point I was trying to make, thank you, is that if people can come together in a collective bargaining and bargain with their employers and work on workplace safety and justice and pay issues, they're going to have better wages. They're going to have better benefits. Study after study shows that there is an advantage as far as, you know, that sort of collective bargaining, that I think it's somewhere, 68% versus 74%, I think, was the numbers that they had. That receive overtime pay, or the numbers were a little different there. When you start talking numbers, you got to look, right?
Right, yeah, I know. But it union members are likely to get the overtime as opposed to non-union members.
Oh, very, very definitely. And in fact, you look at the attacks on the regulations on overtime, and that's going to even skew more so in the future.
Yeah. If given the option, according to your the AFL-CIO report, 54% of workers would join a union tomorrow, including 41% of people who identified themselves as Republicans. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. When I talk to people in the community who are not members, and there's honest discussion about what's going on in their workplaces, about what they want to see for their future, what they want to see for, you know, income security with their families. When they look at what's happening in terms of the attacks on, once again, rights and wages and, you know, them having a voice in the workplace, you know, they start to understand the value of forming unions. The problem is that the laws are skewed so heavily in it, against people when they try to form unions, and there's kind of an unlevel playing field for people to organize. So those are the sorts of things that we also have to dig in and look for more fairness and justice so that people have the right to freely have discussions and vote on forming unions without fear of reprisal or retribution or being fired.
Our guest is Phil Neuenfeld. He is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, talking about labor issues on this Labor Day. This is our traditional Labor Day program, and we welcome your questions for him. We welcome your own experiences. We welcome your thoughts on issues facing labor. On this Labor Day, are you working? Are you getting overtime? If given the choice, would you join a union today? Those are some of the questions that the National AFL-CIO asked, and we're discussing the answers, and we'd welcome your answers, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the state of organized labor in Wisconsin today and other issues facing workers in Wisconsin with our guest, Phil Neuenfeld, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. We have talked with either Phil or another member of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO for the past many years, and his predecessor before that for a couple of decades. So this is an ongoing tradition where we talk about labor on Labor Day and welcome your experiences and questions and views. I want to thank Naija Ellison, who is also working on this Labor Day with me. And I have to say that I probably worked more Labor Days than I haven't worked. I a lot of times work on holidays, as that's the nature of broadcasting, because the show must go on. We have many callers, so let's go to Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed.
Well, Joy, we still have 23 days to sign you up to become a member of AFTRA, so we'll work on that.
All right, thanks, Ed. All right.
It's been a disastrous year, 2016, 2017. Organized labor couldn't go TV for Hillary. Part of that was Hillary's fault. She didn't listen to those of us in organized labor to even make a trip to Wisconsin during the campaign. The election of Trump, the first nominee for Secretary of Labor, was an absolute abomination. Prevailing wage got destroyed in the legislature in the spring without any massive picketing. There hasn't been any massive picketing, bird dogging of Mr. Walker during this disastrous Foxconn debacle that's going to just be misery for the state of Wisconsin. And the only really great high point for organized labor in 2017 was Michael Moore's play on Broadway, Terms of My Surrender. I talked to him, Joy, on Friday night, and he's willing to be on your last program on the 29th of September. So that's my assist for organized labor 2017.
Well, you brought a lot of issues up that we do want to talk about. Ed, thank you very much for the call. I don't know about the 29th, but hopefully we can try to have Michael Moore on the air. Phil, Ed says, let me just get your, he says 2017 has been a disaster for organized labor. Would you agree with that or not?
Well, it'd be hard to disagree that, you know, 2017 going back to, all the way back to 2011 when Scott Walker launched Act 10, that there's been constant attacks and constant disasters or hardships for organized labor. But it's you know, keep in mind, it's not just organized labor. It's working men and women that have lost wages and benefits under all these regulation changes and law changes. And Wisconsin has been, you know, very, very active. I mean, you've seen demonstrations and picketing and things going on over the years. We're doing our best to make sure that through social media and other communication concerns that we keep informing people every time there is a law that negatively affects their lives, that they contact legislators, that they understand that, you know, elections matter, that people that they vote for, that it matters who they vote for because they are making decisions that affect their lives. And people are continuing to get engaged in various ways, shapes, and forms, and we are and always will be organizing towards trying to change the dynamics so that it better favors working people or at least brings the balance forward. As far as the 2016 elections, you know, there's many reasons that people talk about why the elections went bad here in Wisconsin. And at the end of the day, I suspect that, you know, it's part and parcel of all the concerns that have a, you know, that had the outcome that brought about the outcome that we've seen. So yes, it's been a very hard year. The attacks continue. They've continued going back to 2011. And people continue to get engaged through their union to fight those things. And that's another reason that I think people view organized labor in a favorable fashion, and that it's becoming more and more favorable. It's not because we've run away or hid or backed down from fights and debates and those sorts of things, but rather it's because we are engaged and we are fighting for labor's rights, for working families' rights, for all families' rights.
Let's talk a little bit about Foxconn. The state legislature is taking up tomorrow the $3 billion incentives package to land Foxconn to build this huge facility in southeastern Wisconsin. In early August, the AFL-CIO laid out its key principles for a good deal on Foxconn. They include family-supporting wages, strong workplace safety, the freedom to stand together as a team, and several others. Did the bill that passed the assembly do that?
I do not believe it's done that, and we're going to continue to enforce those principles. And it goes back to, you know, just about our whole discussion so far into this show about how we've got to come together and try to make sure that these sorts of things take place. Otherwise, you know, you're going to continue to have the inequity that you have. And in these cases, you know, I think there should be higher expectation on jobs that are created, obviously, when you have public dollars going into it. So the process is continuing to move forward. We're going to continue to, you know, lobby and educate people and try to get people engaged so that the questions are asked about, you know, what do these jobs mean for Wisconsin workers exactly, and what sort of wages and benefits can be created, but also importantly, you know, assurances so that, you know, people can have that discussion about forming a union without fear of reprisal. Mm-hmm. These are things that we think are very, very important. That's why we've put that out there, and it has helped as far as given a, I don't know what you would call it, a baseline or talking points or a discussion about the quality of jobs that should be created.
How friendly or unfriendly is Foxconn to labor unions?
Well, I've personally not had any discussion or experiences with them. I only know what I hear as far as what's happened in China and other places with workers, but so far to date, nobody's, at least I've not had any discussions or mm-hmm. experiences with them.
Assembly Democrats proposed an amendment that would require that at least 70% of Foxconn employees be Wisconsin residents, but that amendment was not adopted by Republicans. Though we just heard from a state senator, Luther Olson, that he still wants to firm up some language to try to make sure that more Wisconsin workers get hired here.
That would be a good idea, seeing as it's Wisconsin working families that are, you know, kicking in the money for this. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, that would be a really good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah. What do you think is ultimately going to happen with regard to Foxconn?
Well, you know, it certainly seems like they think that they've got the votes, you know, to make this happen. I think that, you know, we've got to continue to raise the questions. The one thing that I am encouraged about is that the longer the debate goes on, the more people in public are becoming aware of the fact that, you know, we've got to have these discussions on wages and the value of these jobs and the quality of these jobs, you know, in exchange for the investments that we're seeing. That it really should have, you know, access to family-supporting jobs, that it should benefit Wisconsin communities. So the more the debate goes on, I think the more people are seeing what's, you know, taking place and getting engaged in it. So hopefully, you know, as it continues to go through the process, we'll see changes that makes it a better deal.
We are talking with Phil Neuenfeld. He is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. This is our annual Labor Day program with the AFL-CIO. We're welcoming your questions on this Labor Day about issues facing working people. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Curdine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Curdine Show. We have a lot of comments on Facebook, and I'm just going to give you a couple to get you to react, Phil. Travis on Facebook says, we have laws now to protect workers. Unions should be optional, not mandatory. Lucia on Facebook says, if the employers are fair with the employees, you don't need a union. What about that belief that workers don't need unions in this day and age?
Well, I really believe, once again, going back to that Gallup poll and showing unions being viewed in a more and more favorable way, that it's actually the direct opposite that's happening. That the more you're seeing, you know, fair wage regulations being removed, overtime regulations being removed, the tax on health care, more people working more hours and being paid less, just on and on and on and on. I mean, clearly the need to collectively bargain, I think, is there. When you look at the broader picture of union density and the effect that union density has on wages for all workers, it really points to the need for people to be in unions in a much larger way, because it does drive up wages and benefits for everybody. And, you know, it's about the economic issues, but it's also about fairness in the workplace and having a voice in the workplace. Because having a collective bargaining unit allows you to, you know, if you are in a good environment, it does allow you to participate in a much better way, because, you know, you have that power source of working with your other workers on changes. It affects health and safety. It affects so many things that are under attack in the workplace that, you know, I just think the direct opposite is what we're seeing and is what is being supported moving forward.
Let's go to Mandy in Watertown. Hi, Mandy.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad you brought up safety. My dad was the union president for Winnebago County Highway Department, and what a lot of people don't realize is that those highway department employees are much more likely to die on the job than police officers and firefighters. And an interesting thing to note is that both police officers and firefighters are not included in the Act 10 legislation. And safety is so important, because one of the things that that my dad really pushed for was proper safety training classes in Madison for all of his coworkers, safety equipment, and precautions. And a lot of that stuff has now been taken away.
A reaction, Phil?
Well, absolutely. I mean, safety, you know, every year Wisconsin workers have a Worker Memorial Day, because, you know, too often people leave for work in the morning and don't come home at night or get injured on the job. And many of those situations are avoidable, and it really points to the reason as to why people need to have a voice in the workplace, so that they have the ability to point to unsafe work conditions, that they can deal for solutions on those things without fears of reprisal. So yeah, no, that's safety is extremely important. It continues to be important. It will always be important. The health and the lives of our members and all workers is just it's a raising priority, especially when you see the OSHA rollbacks and other things.
Thank you, Mandy. Don in Eagle is with us now. Hi, Don.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. So I'd like to have your guest comment on why it seems that here in Wisconsin over the past many years we've had people vote against their self-interest. You know, you've talked about the fact that elections do matter, and they do. We've had either people, when voting against their self-interest, or on the other hand, we've had people not voting at all when it applies to the erosion of worker rights. And what I comment on, just what was said in the last couple minutes, some of the Facebook page posts that Joy referred to show some people being, unfortunately, uninformed. We also see that there's a pocket of people in our state who are identified by Professor Kathy Kramer as being resentful. They're resentful of people who may have had worker rights that were rolled back via Act 10. So perhaps, again, your guest could comment on why it is that there's this preponderance of people who are working class individuals, either represented by unions or not, who seem to be election after election over the past 7-8 years voting against their self-interest.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you for that question. It is a frustration, I think, when you look at that, but it doesn't just happen by mistake. You know, there's been laws passed at the national level called the Citizens United that allows unlimited spending by corporations and individuals, and you're seeing more and more money, dark money, pour into Wisconsin politics, money coming from outside of the state to try to move a message that does, in fact, divide and conquer. And that is their part of their strategy, is to try and divide and conquer people, whether it's around single issues or people feeling, you know, the whole, I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase it, but, you know, if one person has something and another person doesn't, you know, they really try to strive, like, why do they have it and you don't? They shouldn't have it. When the way that we need to view things and the way we try to get people to view things is, yes, those people have that. We should all have that. All boats rise in the tide, or, you know,
when a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah, rising tide raises all boats. I'm sorry.
That's right.
Monday morning. You know, when you talk about, you know, when we all do better, we all do better. It's those sorts of things. And so we continue to organize and to work against, you know, this big money influence. You're seeing gerrymandering. You're seeing voter ID. You're seeing all kinds of things to try to do voter suppression, to keep people from voting, to make people feel like it doesn't matter when it really does matter. So let's all work together. Let's try to make sure that we get candidates and get campaigns and get behind them that support worker wages, this and worker benefits, and family supporting initiatives and campaigns. We need to learn to ask questions. You know, the next time a politician comes out and says, "Make America great again," the question we should ask is, "Great for who?" You know, when they talk about they're going to be working for families, they have family values. We need to ask, whose families are you valuing? Because there's too much of the, you know, single slogan going on, the campaign slogan with a lot of money driven behind it. And, you know, there's falsehoods and misleading statements with a lot of money behind it. And people hear that over and over again, and they start to think that, oh, yeah, that must be the way it is. Mm-hmm. So the way that you fight the big money and the investments and the messaging that they have is to just continue to organize and talk to your coworkers and talk to your community people about it, and let's make sure we get people out to vote. It is a very, you know, it's a very important issue. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, let me go on to Tony in Madison next. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Joy, you're going to be severely missed by all Wisconsin listeners.
Thank you, Tony.
To the union, your AFL-CIO.
Right.
And the president of Wisconsin's AFL-CIO, or...
That's right, Tony. Phil Neufeld is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO.
I hope we're not spending union money. First of all, I want to thank you for well-spoken comments on all that's going on with the current governor of the state and what he's done to unions. But what I object to is our use of lobbyists, because I think we're outgunned by corporations who do have demand.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in, Tony, because your phone line's a little bit fuzzy. But Phil, Tony is concerned about the AFL-CIO paying lobbyists, thinking it's a waste of money, and that, as he just mentioned, labor is outgunned by corporations. What's your reaction to that?
Well, clearly, I mean, you know, you look at how money is spent on elections and how much more money corporations spend on those elections. But when you also look at how much more money spent on lobbying, I mean, that also takes place. So it goes back to the, you know, my comments earlier about organizing, because you need to, you know, organize. And I mean, you're your own voice. You can contact legislators. You can go meet with legislators in their district. You can have meetings with legislators when they come home to their districts. You can call them, you can write them, you can email them. Those are the sorts of things that we are spending a lot of time advocating for, is for people to get engaged in those face-to-face discussions with those legislators and remember what they do and hold them accountable on Election Day. That's what's going to make a difference. You know, if you don't do that, if we don't do that collectively, all they're going to see and hear from are the corporate lobbyists that are lying outside their doors coming to talk to them and talking to them about the financial contributions they can get somewhere down the line.
We are talking with Phil Neufeld. He is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. We're welcoming your questions for him about the state of organized labor, the issues facing working people. Your thoughts on this Labor Day about the future of organized labor? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We haven't gotten a lot of answers to the question I posed earlier. If given the choice, would you join a labor union today? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. This is the Ideas Network. We are continuing our decades-long tradition of talking about labor on Labor Day today with the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, who will answer your questions and respond to your views about labor issues at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Phil Neufeld is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. And I should ask you, Phil, before we go back to the calls, and we have many of them, what are your Labor Day plans today? Is there a Labor Day celebration that you'll be attending?
I'll be going down to the Milwaukee celebration, and then I'm planning on driving up to Madison this afternoon and visiting the brothers and sisters up there. So hope to see many of your listeners along the way.
And that'll be at probably the Labor Temple?
That'll be out at the Labor Temple.
Yeah.
Good food, good people, good music.
Sounds good. Jeff in Appleton is with us. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Joy. Congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
Phil, I'd like to bring it back to a personal level, a personal note. After 30 years of employment with a local employer here in Appleton, with a completely clean working union record, I was arbitrarily terminated from my employment. And had it not been for, I believe, and I was not an active union employee, but I was always a supporter, as was my father, who was a union employee for 30 plus years, almost 40 years, and thank goodness for that, as my mother benefits from it now today. My union came to my rescue, and with the good God graces of an arbitrator from Milwaukee, I was reinstated and made whole again. And I do not believe I would have had any options had I not had that representation. And I just want to say, people out there, learn about unionism, where it came from, what it represents. Don't be jealous of a union worker's income, because they lift everyone. Ask the middle management where I worked for 30 years. They lift everyone's wages to livable, sustainable wages. And we need that in this country, and we forget that.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Phil, you want to react to Jeff's story?
Well, you know, I'm very thankful that things worked out. And yes, it, you know, bad things can happen to good people. And, you know, people can end up in situations that where there isn't fairness. And the best way to have fairness and justice, once again, in the workplace is through collective bargaining and, you know, having representation. And, you know, that representation is, you know, is the value of everybody coming together. And if bad things happen, you don't necessarily have to stand alone. You can, you know, stand with others. And, you know, thank you for your comments. That's a beautiful testimony in terms of, you know, one of the many, many values of organized labor.
Thank you, Jeff. Caleb in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Caleb.
Good morning. I myself am not working today, but I appreciate the two of you working, so I have something to listen to while I'm on the road.
Thank you, Caleb.
Where are you going?
I am up north for the weekend.
The Northwoods, okay.
My question is, I personally am not in a union, but I have several friends that work for different companies, public and private, that are in unions and don't necessarily want to be, but didn't have much of an option. And it seemed like the biggest criticism I've heard out of them is the tendency for unions to protect the underachievers, the underperformers. I believe it was a couple years ago in Wisconsin, there was a woman that won Teacher of the Year and then ended up being let go because she didn't have seniority. My brother-in-law is in a union environment and was specifically told by his boss that he couldn't get a promotion until employee X got one because employee X had seniority over him, even though he was performing better. And I'm just wondering if that's been something that has been discussed within unions, or if any changes have been made to address that, or how that is dealt with, I guess.
Phil?
Sure. The question of seniority is something that's brought up in contracts throughout the state, and it's stronger in some contracts than in others, but it's something that is discussed and goes through collective bargaining, and negotiations go on with that, and agreements are made. But agreements are made not just by a few individuals. It's made by people coming together and voting on whether or not to accept the collective bargaining agreements, of which seniority is always an important topic of discussion. You know, when you talk about, you know, equal pay for women, when you talk about fair wages, when you talk about fairness, seniority can be a very, very important mechanism to ensure that there is fairness in workplaces. And, you know, how a supervisor may or may not talk about something to try to antagonize or drive wedges into workplaces, it's unclear, not knowing that the discussion. But, you know, there's just a wide range of it. And it also depends what trade and what industry you work in, because, you know, the languages are stronger in some than in others. And in some, you know, certain trades don't have seniority. It is based on, you know, your skills and abilities in many ways. But all that comes into play, and there's so many disagreements on it. But as I said, it can be a very valuable tool in terms of trying to make sure that there's fairness in the workplace as well.
Yeah. Caleb mentioned that he has friends who are union members, whether they want to be or not, saying that they, you know, they are in a union, I guess, mandatorily. But that's not the case anymore, is it? Isn't, or is it? The right to work status of Wisconsin?
No, that's not the case. No one ever really yeah. had to be a member. You know, when we talk about fairness in terms of paying you know, union dues. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of fairness. It's kind of like taxes, right? I mean, you know, we all contribute. We should all pay our fair share. So when you talk about representation and rights and, you know, who's going to shoulder the cost and the burden of that, you know, that's where you get into those questions.
Yeah. Lee in Williams Bay is with us. Hi, Lee.
Oh, hi, Joy, and hello to your guest. I was a teacher, a speech and language pathologist for 35 years, always in a school district, and I always was a strong union member. But after Act 10, I saw all of our wages were decreased, our school day was lengthened, people were dismissed based on lies or falsehoods by the administration. And I've really, finally, I believe absolute power corrupts. And unions always, during my 35 years, provided a balance against administration. And thank you very much for this program.
All right. Thank you, Lee. So she thinks unions provided a balance of power. But after Act 10, it sounded like all bets were off there.
Well, absolutely. I mean, workers still, there's still a value for public employees to come together in collective bargaining with their unions, or rather to come together in their unions, because collectively, if they are united, they're going to have a stronger voice in terms of dealing with how work rules and so many decisions are made with local county boards and school boards and so on and so forth. But that was the intent, was to divide, conquer, and then to try to, you know, create absolute power. And, you know, that power, a lot of that is politically driven. But when you go around the state and you have discussions with public employee unions and you hear about the bullying and the intimidation and the things that go on, it's just, it really is, can make you very emotional and very angry about what's happened here. You know, a labor union, if you form a collective bargaining unit, if you're a local union, you have, you know, an independent voice in your workplace. And it does help level the playing field, both in, you know, when you look at the laws that go on, when you look at what goes on across the country, you know, organized labor is that voice that is the counter to what corporations and CEOs are spending and putting out there. So it isn't just, you know, it isn't just by circumstance that you're seeing all this money spent to try to attack unions and attack working people and to divide and conquer. It's with a very deliberate intent of trying to secure political power for themselves. And, you know, they don't like the fact that we do studies that show income inequality and puts information out there about the ratio of CEO spending to workers, or rather, not spending, but wages. So. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a very deliberate agenda, and we as working people have to make sure that we come together and don't fall for that and ask questions and consider, you know, one of the callers earlier talked about why do people vote against their economic interests. Those are the things that we have to keep talking to people about, not to fall into those traps.
Yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit to the national scene. We've been focusing a lot on Wisconsin, but Donald Trump, as we know, was elected president last fall. Our first caller brought this up in part as an example of how 2017 was a disaster to working people. How do you rate, Phil, the job that President Trump has been doing so far when it comes to working people?
Well, how negative can I go? I don't really know. I mean, you know, you have people who put out great messages, but then what really happens, right? So, you know, we have one very important national issue coming up, and that's called NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to renegotiate NAFTA. Once again, you know, we want to make sure that as those sorts of things, you know, take place, that, you know, they create jobs, that they provide reasonable protections for American workers, that they look at Buy American policies, you know, that they talk about labor laws that can be enforced. You know, so you know, you hear a lot of hype, you hear a lot of talk, you hear a lot of messages, but really what have we really seen? And I'm sure there's other callers out there that'll say, well, you know, this or that, but once again, ask questions, look at the evidence. I've seen overtime regulations being cut back. I've seen changes at the NLRB coming down. I've seen nothing that looks very positive for working people or bargaining units coming out of the Trump administration.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. We have Lori in Vernon County. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good morning. I had to laugh when you talked about the efforts to get to, you know, for us to call our legislators, my assembly representative out here in western Wisconsin doesn't answer his phone he turns off his phone when there's any controversial action coming up. So I think we're maybe at a point where we need to do a little more active organizing rather than relying on the same old things that you've been doing for the last 50 years as the union movement has declined so much. I'm very much a supporter of the United Nurses Union and some of the SEIU and some of the agricultural union workers. Does the AFL-CIO have any plans to get a little more vocal, to take on the Democratic Party as well, who have not been serving us with their third way type support for offshoring and all the rest of the neoliberal agenda that's really hurting us. They don't come out here to rural areas. I haven't seen AFL-CIO out here doing any sort of organizing. So can we look forward to some sort of active organizing rather than phone calls?
Well, absolutely. We have a staff person in western Wisconsin who's been working with our affiliates, advocating with your congressman about fair trade agreements. I myself have been there at press conference and things outside of his office. It's a shame that for some reason it hasn't connected to you personally. There's people that are meeting on what we call regional solidarity roundtables to look at, you know, the issues of solidarity, to look at the issues of accountability. And when I talk about accountability, it's all those things that you talked about making sure that legislators understand what the agenda is for working families collectively, and holding them accountable regardless of party. You know, we want to make sure that as elections move forward and you're going to see debates, you're going to see those sorts of things take place, candidate forums and so on and so forth, we're going to make sure that, you know, worker issues and wage issues and those sorts of things are taking place throughout, you know, that whole debate. If you want to email me your contact information or go on Facebook and contact me, I'll make sure that you're in contact with the people that are working on this in western Wisconsin. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Phil, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. And once again, you know, I've really appreciated, you know, the forum that you provide, and want to, you know, congratulate you on your retirement. I'm sure we're going to hear from you. I don't think you're just going to go somewhere and hide, right?
I'm not going to hide. I'll travel, and I'll be involved in things from the other side of the microphone. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. Phil Neuenfeld, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Thanks to Niaja Ellison for producing this program, along with Bill Martins. Thanks to producers Keely Boltina and executive producer Michelle Johnson as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.